Mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, friends for life, won't live in the past. All I wanna do now is making it last.
As a female, this topic is going to really hit close to home today because I think it's one of the topics we don't talk about enough. This is Making It Last podcast. I'm your host, Noreen Daly, and we're going to be talking about abuse today. And we're doing this with Suzanne O'Millian. Did I get that right, Suzanne?
That was excellent.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So Suzanne is an attorney, an author. She's a workshop facilitator, and she works with women who have experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, abuse, and other kinds of trauma. Now, before we get into the conversation, which is what are the 7 steps to thriving after abuse, tell us, what is it or why did you decide to focus on this area?
Okay, so I have been an attorney for many years, mm-hmm. and I have always been interested in women's rights. I think that's why I went to law school in the 1970s. I also, although I'd never had a personal situation mm-hmm. In terms of abuse or sexual assault, I was always interested in that at a very young age, and I had done some victim advocacy even okay. while I was in law school. Coming out of law school, I did some work. I represented women who were coming out of marriages mm-hmm. where there had been mm-hmm. abusive relationships. And then I moved into some more policy work, doing child welfare work, and also beginning to understand that this is work that I was destined to do, and I mm-hmm. started writing about it, actually. But in 1999, in October of that year, my niece Maggie, who was a 19-year-old college student, mm-hmm. was shot and killed by her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, in a college here in the United States. And everything I'd ever done came to that moment. And it was also very difficult for me mm-hmm. because I had all this knowledge and I couldn't save her. But I needed to do something else. And so I sort of switched from doing that crisis intervention, helping women when they were in the crisis, and the prevention part of it, to working with women to help them move on, because my niece didn't have that chance to move on and to thrive after she survived, which she didn't quite understand as abuse. He was never physically assaultive to her until he murdered her. And so in her mind, although I think other signs were there that she wasn't in danger, and I think she tried to solve the problem all by herself. So I couldn't help her. I couldn't change what happened to her, but I wanted to help other women who could move on and to really understand that this is a journey and we're going to move, perhaps through struggles. We're going to feel like a victim. We are going to mm-hmm. be a victim, but we can also be a survivor, but to do more than just survive. And, that's what I wanted to do, because I was suddenly on my own journey as a secondary victim, a survivor of homicide, and I wanted to not get stuck in my anger or confusion about why did this happen, how did this happen, and it couldn't have happened, disbelief and anger and hopelessness. So I wanted to also start to move on, and I wanted to help other women do that.
So you said you wrote a book, which is really what we're going to be talking about. So mm-hmm. the whole idea of 7 steps to thriving after abuse. So mm-hmm. tell us, well, you basically told us what inspired the book, so we can go right into mm-hmm. it. So what are those 7 steps? And how did you arrive at the 7 steps? Why not 2 okay. steps or 3 steps? Why 7?
That's a good question. I'll have to think about that and okay. get back to you on that one.
Not a problem. Mm-hmm.
So I started doing these workshops after Maggie was killed, and mm-hmm. I started putting together exercises for the women, and it just kind of worked out to 7 steps. I started seeing that we needed to prepare them on this journey, and the first step is to see the journey, the one I just described, victim to survivor to thriver. And it's kind of a linear journey. It kind of moves from one to the other, but you can go back and forth, sometimes get pulled back into victim. And so it's important to know that you're on a journey. Some women thought, oh, I didn't know I was on a journey. I thought I've always been a victim. You know, I'm a great survivor. I can survive anything. And I'm like, well, that's good, but let's put some energy in a more positive place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first step. The second step is to quiet down the negative critic in your head, the negative voice in your head that says you're not good enough, bad things always happen to you, you're never going to get your life together. And sometimes when we're in abusive situations, a relationship or even as a child, this voice gets fed by the person who's abusing you. You know, you're fat and stupid and no one's going to ever love you, so you have to stay with me. And that negative voice is just one voice in your head. So trying to recognize it's a negative voice and start to bring up positive and using affirmations. I am strong. I am powerful. I am enough. And then the third step is to bring up that happy person inside. That's what I call the positive voice, really big. And to see that that's your inner cheerleader, and she loves you, loves you, loves you, and she's going to give you some wisdom, and you can keep connecting. Lots of people who go through trauma think that every part of them has been touched by that trauma. I think there's a part of you that's been untouched, and you want to bring that part back up. And for some people who've had multiple traumas, it's hard to remember that you ever felt that way. So it's really kind of renewing all that, or to find it in the first place. So the fourth step is to get that positive energy and to start feeding it, even if it's little things that you do every day. I love to walk every day outside. That makes me happy. So that's my positive energy. Every morning I try to get up, go outside, and hopefully it's not raining, snowing. It's sunny maybe, and that gives me positive. It's a little thing that I do, but then it's the next positive and the next positive. And then step number five is, with all this positive energy, not the negative energy or the negative viewpoint, my life is not going anywhere, let's set a vision for your life. Now, sometimes women come into my workshop with big visions. You know, I want to go back to school, become a doctor. I want to start a nonprofit and help other children who've been abused. And sometimes it's just, I want to get my life moving again and I want to get a better job. Or I want to go back to school and maybe get a two-year degree and see if I can get a job that I really love. So whatever that vision is, to really put it out there as the happy person inside, and all the obstacles are gone, all the things that you think are holding you back, which may just be thoughts, because the next step is overcoming fear. I have a theory about fear. A lot of our fears are just thoughts, not things. So physical safety, physical violence is a thing. And if that's in your life, you need to, that's a thing. You got to protect yourself from that.
Okay.
But thoughts like rejection, fear of abandonment, fear of success, are all thoughts. They may be based on a prior thing that happened to you. Years ago, I got rejected for a job. Now I feel rejected every time I apply for a job. That's a thought, and you can overcome that thought. And then once you overcome those fears, I also call them limiting beliefs about yourself. You know, I'll never get my life together. That's a limiting belief. You could have a much unlimited belief. I can do anything. I'm strong. I am powerful. And then finally, the seventh step is to set new goals based on that vision, based on that new positive energy. And sometimes the women set a goal that just gets them started, you know, gets them back into the world. And sometimes they have a larger goal, but do it step by step, make them attainable. And I make them do the steps backwards. What's the last thing you're going to do before you publish your book? You're going to have a book launch. What's the next thing? Get the publisher to send me the copies before that. So they can see where their fears are, those, once again, thoughts, not things. And then they can say, okay, I'm kind of scared in this step. Who can help? Who can support me? Where can I get support to get through that step? And so it's really breaking it down so it's very realistic and very attainable, so they don't feel like they failed, you know, one more time in their life. So together, the seven steps help people to move. Now, when I ask the women who've been in my group for a period of time, because I do a workshop and I also keep in contact with the women and do other activities, they tell me the two steps they come back to the most, because I think you have to keep working at it. It's not like a one-time thing. They come back a lot to the inner critic, you know, oh my God, that inner critic's popping up again. It's telling me that I can't do that. I've got to find a response to that. And then the other one they come back to is keeping that happy person inside really vibrant and doing things that will challenge them to understand that that's the part of them that's going to keep them going. And in taking that challenge, it's not necessarily a struggle, but it is something they have to work at every day, because something might happen. Somebody's going to mention, so you'll be triggered by something back to your trauma. And you have to remember to, a lot of people who work with trauma victims talk about a grounding exercise, ground yourself back down into reality. And for me, that's a happy person inside. I have seen women do amazing things with the steps, or just the idea of starting to move again, you know, going back to school, singing again, painting again, playing music again, beginning to see a career, or working with their children, because children who witness this kind of violence that might be perpetrated on their parents are going to have an impact too. And your children are on a journey too. So trying to show by example, yeah, bad things have happened to us, but look where we're going now.
Yes.
And I have in fact seen over the years, some of the kids that I've met of the women in my group, I've seen them grow up, and I can see how they have really embraced and have told me how much it meant to have their mother in that different space, because kids model what adults do, and they pick up the energy. So
that's
it's really kind of a lifelong process. And it's not like I made this up. It's a pretty common human process that we go through. What I talk to the women about is, where are you stuck? You know, your positive energy is really low. Your negative thoughts are really high. You don't have any vision. So let's see if we can really hone in on that. And work on that step and see if we can bring that up. Because when bad things happen to you, it's hard to be positive every day, and
That's
it's hard
true.
To also see the future. But it's possible, and I think if we can role model for each other, and they have certainly helped me on my journey, then we can all get to some better place.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation, but we're going to take a little break and get a word from our sponsor.
Are you struggling to become an effective communicator? Let Noreen Daly, the communications specialist, get you there. Services include communications consultancy, one-on-one coaching, public speaking and debate training, leadership and team building sessions, plus much more. Visit NoreenDaly.com for more info. Noreen Daly, redefining the way you communicate.
You actually somewhat answered a question I was going to ask, because I think
earlier
you said that this is the process is not linear. Yes, that's what you said,
right?
In terms of the step-by-step process. But then afterwards you said like it's lifelong. Now, how then do you maintain that momentum? Because we're in a society where we're so accustomed to things happening quickly that even in terms of our relationship, sometimes we expect to heal quickly and move on quickly. So how then do we maintain the momentum and be reminded that, hey, this is a lifelong process and it will take some time?
Right. That's exactly, you're exactly right. We also live in a very fear-based society. There are a lot of fears out there. And some of them we should pay attention to. But a lot of them are thoughts or things that have happened in the past, and we're afraid to put ourselves out there. Yes, it is a lifelong process. What I was talking about linear more was that sometimes I feel like right now talking to you, I feel like a thriver. But something could happen to me tomorrow, and it could be my car doesn't start or something, and then I'm back in victim. And the thing I've learned about that, going back or getting pulled back into a state before thriver, is that I can decide how long I stay there. And sometimes when that happens to me, I'm like, okay, I'm being pulled back. This feels really bad. Let's see, how long do I want to stay here? Like for 5 minutes or 2 hours or 3 days? And it's, you know, it's kind of, I'm making a joke of it, but it is a choice. And for some people, the grieving process of what has happened to them, you know, may take a certain period of time, but we have many examples of people who have risen up from incredible things. And when they talk about it, sometimes they don't have words for it, but it's the sense that there's a part of you that wants to be successful and wants to be happy and wants to be a productive member. And when you can get to that part of you, it feels so good that you want to remember that and say, yeah, that's the thing I want to come back to, because that's kind of like your reward. For me, is being in a state where I can have be meaningful, I can do meaningful work, I can help and heal others. Mm-hmm. So when I figured that out, it's like, if that's my reward, then this is the kind of work I want to do, because it's going to make me happy. And just defining that a little bit more, because, you know, we get kind of caught in the idea there's a happy ending, and we haven't found our happy ending yet. So let's define happy. What's happy for you? And for me, it's doing meaningful work. That's true all the way through my career. When I went to law school, I wasn't going to become a tax lawyer. I mean, tax lawyers can do meaningful work, I'm sure, and I know they do. But for me, that wasn't meaningful. And so once I could find that work and really concentrate on it, that was my happy ending. And then it just kept growing and building, and I became better at it, and I had a way to define it clearer for me and to keep moving to build my skills to make it even better, so I could be even more successful at helping and healing others.
All right, tell me something. Based on what you've encountered over the years, do you think that adherence to these steps is tied to somebody's age or based on the environment that they're in?
I don't think it has much to do with age, although the age factor comes in. I have women all ages who come into my workshop and read my books, and some of them say, oh, I'm too old. You know, the inner critic's like, oh, you're too old to start over. Oh, you're too old. You know, you've screwed up your life. There's no hope. So that idea is really a limiting belief about yourself, and we talk about that. And sometimes they just realize that, yeah, they may not be able to be as agile or run around the block four times, but their spirit is as young as whatever. I think there's other women that had, and not just women, but people in general who've had very severe trauma histories since they were children. Mm-hmm. And it is really hard because they haven't felt any of this. But then sometimes when they suddenly do, and I sometimes in my workshops literally see their faces light up because some part of them is like connecting again. And sometimes this feels like, you know, childish kind of energy, kind of like happy, slappy, you know, we're having fun being silly. And sometimes that sort of confuses them. Like that's like too young. I'm supposed to be an adult. But when they get back into that kind of, you know, everything's okay as long as I feel okay and I am pursuing something that's positive and makes me happy. And then they start to work with it, and eventually they can make something more of it, make it more concrete. And maybe it is about, I'm going to write my story, or I'm going to go back to school, or I'm going to do some charity work. There's something that's been blocking them.
Yes.
And in that blockage, they need to pull out what it is. What is it? Is it a negative thought? Is it just this pattern that feels so overwhelming? And I would agree, it's an overwhelming place to be.
Yes.
But we are resilient as human beings. And the seven steps that I put together, I'm not that smart. I mean, it's really a human process that we all go through. We don't always have words for it. I put words to it, and we always don't know where we're stuck. So if you can figure out where you might be stuck, and that's what's really cool when the women say, oh my God, I've been stuck because I have these overwhelming fears that really are only thoughts. If I could get over that, and then they try it, and oh yeah, I can do that. And if they can't figure that out, they'll be stuck the rest of their lives.
I know you've been enjoying the conversation, but we're going to take a little break and get a word from our sponsor. So the whole idea of a branding strategy sounded so exotic and so fancy to me. But after having several conversations with Neon, I now have a clearer understanding. I am sure of what my identity is, what it is that I want people to see Noreen Daly as. Thanks, Neon. Thanks, Splint. Visit them at wearesplint.com. if it is that somebody's listening and they're saying, boy, Suzanne, you know, this sounds like a lot of steps. If you had to condense what you just described, how would you condense it in maybe about three steps?
Okay. So I think you definitely have to see yourself on a journey.
Okay.
You definitely have to work on positive energy, however you do that. Mm-hmm. Negative mm-hmm. quieting down, positive coming up. Mm-hmm. Definitely have a vision for your life.
Okay.
Even if it's a simple thing, next week I'm going to go to the grocery store for the first time because now I'm going to be outside. And then finally, some kind of goal that you can reach, even if it's a small goal, so you can take that energy and that, oh my God, I did it, and bring it back to the beginning and take on the next goal. So seeing your journey, getting positive energy, having a vision, and start to work on a new goal or a goal that will get the process moving.
Final question. I noticed you said thriving after abuse. Why is it you didn't say surviving?
Because I think surviving's only the step in between victim and thriver. I think surviving's important.
Mm-hmm.
As Maya Angelou said, surviving is important, but thriving is elegant.
Ah.
And I love that because it begins to move the energy in a place maybe you've never been to before, or maybe you have been and you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of your life, I mean, Maya Angelou is a victim, survivor, mm-hmm. and a thriver.
Yes.
Because her life completely, if you didn't know her history and you met her in that thriving stage as an older woman, you would not believe, because her energy was so amazing and she was so articulate about it. That's what we want to be. Those are our role models. Oprah's another role model like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Maya Angelou, the people who have gone through horrible struggles and you wonder, how did they do that? That's what we want to know.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Suzanne, for sharing your story and just sharing with us.
Thank you.
This was Making It Last podcast, where it's all about helping us to have better relationships, not just with ourselves, with other people. I'm Noreen Daly. Until next time.
Mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, friends for life, won't live in the past. All I wanna do now is making it last. Mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, friends forever, strengthening the friends forever, strengthening the ties that keep us together.